I'm Corrine. I'm a grateful recovering addict.
Hey, Corrine.
And it's truly only through God's grace that I'm here today. And I would like to thank the Montgomery region for inviting me to speak. It's such an honor. I'm very humbled about that. I'm a little nervous. especially when I got to talk about me, you know, and tell the truth about me. But to qualify in, I use to live and live to use. My mission each day that I got up was to get a shot of dope. Anything and everything came secondary. That was the kid. Eating, bathing, sleeping, you know. So I don't have a glory story. You know what I'm saying? It amazed me how dope fiends have shit when they come. You know what I'm saying? Because I didn't have nothing, you know. Toward the end, all I could do was stand at 5th and 8th Street pool room and just hope somebody say, damn, come on, shorty. You know? I couldn't even talk. I had become catatonic. I couldn't even ask for nothing no more, you know? Needless to say that, you know, the disease progressed and progressed and progressed and got worse and worse, and that's what happened. You know, I can remember going to the go-go out Barnett's, you know. So y'all remember Barnett's, huh? I ain't by myself, huh? So I remember going out there, you know, to party, to dance, and get my dance on or whatever. And when I started snorting those buck action, they used to knock on the bathroom door and say, shorty, the go-go over. Because I'd be in there nodding. I ain't care what they was doing on the dance floor. I ain't care how the band sound no more. You know what I'm saying? And needless to say that I was 16. You know, I was cute. You know, dudes gave me stuff. But by the time I woke up one morning and my bowels was breaking and I couldn't stop yawning, I went to them dudes, they was like, Sade, you got to do something for this. The party was over. You know, and I did what I had to do. I was not a good prostitute. Pimps had to chase me to get their money. Because I didn't see the sense in it when I can buy some dope and go somewhere and nod. What took me out of that game was I was up at the Cave on 11th and U. Up there listening to Lorraine Rudolph sitting at the bar, you know, with my cigarette, nodding. And, you know, big time pimp came in, you know, and his buddy, who was really a dope boy, was supposed to be my pimp, you know. And when they came in and saw me in there at the bar, the big time pimp told my boyfriend, man, you need to beat that bitch with a coat hanger. I said, wrong game. I left from uptown and come back for a long time. You know, and what amazed me is that people always wanted me to be in their family. Come on, be in my family, be in my family. For what? Because after you give me some dope, you know, and it's time for me to go to work, I ain't going out there. You know, and so I had to change my hustle and I started writing checks. And hanging paper, old dope fiends in here hanging paper, you know. Clearly, once getting here, I understood that there was something definitely wrong way long before I picked up anything. You know what I'm saying? And because there was a lot of self-hatred before then, you know. And a lot of that had to do with abandonment issues and the molestation, you know, issues and the being told I ain't, you know, shit, ain't gonna never be shit since I was a little girl. You know, it's those kind of things. So, you know, I would do crazy stuff. You know, me and my partner sitting up here on the front row would go up Capitol Hill. You know, we would go up Capitol Hill, and this is no disrespect, but this is what we did, you know, and just steal white people in the face, you know, and just angry. You know, them people ain't do nothing to us. You know what I'm saying? But just angry, you know, going, you know, stealing, I had to cut her loose because she told me she could steal, and we went in the store, and she just dropped out, and I was like, I thought you said you could steal. You know? And what happened was, I went on a methadone program, because toward the end, like I said, I was looking bad, smelling bad, had an infection for a year, a vaginal infection. For a year, yeah, Okay, don't some of y'all act like y'all. Don't do that, because I'll call y'all now. Don't do that. Oh my God. Okay, you don't forget how low you could go. But I had an infection for a year, vaginal infection. And I was not trying to go nowhere to no doctor to see about it. That would interfere with my getting high. And if you sat, and I was thinking, and if you sat next to me and say, damn, what's that? You know, I look at you like, what? You know? And so I got tired. Toward the end, I had a 300-pound trick. And he would come, and I was big as a minute. That was some disgusting stuff. But he would come looking for me, you know? And so I went on the methadone program. But I didn't stay on meth for about 6 months because I was still nodding. You know what I'm saying? And so what I did was I came off the meth, got a bright idea that I could hustle and make some money because I was clean, you know. And so me and a guy took somebody else's check, a wife and husband check up the Treasury Department, thought we were coming out. You know, needless to say, I ended up doing time, you know, in Alderson, West Virginia. When I came home from Alderson, I went to church when I came home. See, I'm so grateful that I went to church before I got here. And that is nothing to make a mockery about the church, because now, you know, my God is my God. You know what I'm saying? I love him. You know what I'm saying? But I don't push the newcomer in the church, you know, for a reason. Because church people can't handle us that haven't been where we've been. You know what I'm saying? There are some churches that have, you know, I love it. Because people who've been where we've been are in position. You know what I'm saying? But then, wasn't none of that happening at the church I went to. So I would get up and testify. You know, because I want to be a good church girl. So I get up and testify, and I say, you know, hallelujah. And I'm not making a mockery, but I'm telling you my experience. You know, the Lord brought me a long way, in which he had, you know. I used to do this and do that, and I don't do that no more, you know. And I used to steal or whatever. And when I go back and sit down, those same good church folk will take their pocketbooks and move them around like that, you know, if I'm sitting next to it. And one time they was having a sale. And one, you know, and I'm just looking at the stuff, you know what I'm saying? I'm just looking at the stuff, you know. And one came up to the other like, you know, get on her. You know she's still. You know what I'm saying? And what I'm saying is that they didn't have the knowledge, you know. And so I was persecuted. I was talked about. I was still... people were still saying, you know, she ain't, you know. You know what I'm saying? And so, I could shout real good, you know. I shout up the aisle on one leg, come back down on the other. On the same leg, I mean. I could do that on the same leg. You know what I'm saying? I'd be waiting. You know how you be waiting for the music to... You know? Yeah, that's what I would do. You know what I'm saying? But when I left church, I go home and cuss everybody out. My husband at the time was shooting dope, and I wasn't using. He said, something wrong with you. You know? Because what was happening was that all that religion was not getting down on the inside. It just stayed right here on the outside. The feeling was good while I was in church. But when I went home and was with me, so what I did was I started going out to clubs singing. Because I just did it, you know. And I was able to go in clubs for 2 years and drink ginger ales. And then one night, the waitress came by and said, oh, that's right, you drink ginger ales. I said, who told you that? I said, bring me a white wine. So I started drinking white wines. You know, and then while you sing, you know, they think, you know, the liquor is going to pump you up to sing. Get that girl another white line so she, white wine so she can sing my damn song. You know? And then the male vocalist, you know, of course, was shooting dope. Because, you know, that's the only man I could deal, kind of man I could deal with. You know? You had to be doing something like that. And that was a direct reflect of how I felt about me, you know. And one night he came past, and he said, I don't know why you're trying to nod off a white wine. You might as well shoot some dope with me. And what happened was divine intervention took place, because truly it was not the white wine what I wanted. Because I would drink 10 white wines and nod. I used to say, damn, how you not off a white wine? I did it. Because I wanted to shoot some dope for real. But I was too scared to really just go back out there. You know, and divine intervention took place, and I was 12-step. And when I came in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I did not come in here to change anything about me. I was just tired emotionally, you know. And I didn't immediately get into any step work. I kept bumping my head, you know, because there was still a lot of self-hatred on the inside. You know, a lot of resentments from the past. And eventually, once I realized that the man wasn't going to be the thing that worked, you know, because when you pick up addictions in recovery while you're clean, shit, they start working like the drugs did. You know? And I was open to the first step, but I was in denial about the second part of the first step. That my life had become unmanageable. I was in denial about being unmanageable emotionally. You know, I was in denial about something was wrong with me. You know? And so I didn't bother with the second part of that first step until, of course, some pain came along, some emotional pain came along. And what took me to my second step was being involved with the married man in recovery. That took me to my second step. I mean, damn, he wasn't married when we stopped doing that, do that night. But damn, the next day he was married. I was like, shit, what happened? He ain't tell me. And I met him at a 7 o'clock meeting. Raise my hand. You know what I'm saying? And the last time that we were together, this is what took me to my second step. The last time that we were together, and we finished that little, you know, and he got on the phone and called his wife from my house. And I said, I know that fool. Now I said, I know that nigga ain't calling his wife on my phone. You know. And then he started putting his pants on. It was all, and he almost failed trying to get his pants on to get out of there, you know. And I was just, it was like all of it was in slow motion. I said, damn, he really trying to leave. And I was left there with all those feelings. Okay, left there with the whatever and the feelings. You know what I'm saying? And then the disease started talking to say, what step you on now? You know? See, I told you you wasn't. You know what I'm saying? And so I called my girlfriend, Frances. I was boo-hooing and crying, and she didn't say a whole lot, but she sent me something in the mail, you know? And it said that, paraphrasing, you are not going to be able to have a relationship with nobody until you start one with yourself and the God of your understanding, you know? And she took me to the second step with that one, you know? And the second step has always been my faith step. You know, I know they talk about like insanity, you know, and I mean, you know, even after being around here for years, it says that in the literature, even after being around here for years, you will still have bouts of insanity, you know? And so, in becoming open to a second step, it took me to my third step. And all I did in my third step was make a decision. That's all I did, you know. But the confirmation came was when I was going through again, you know, and I had the TV on and the psychic line came on, you know. And so I said, shit, let me try there. You know, I didn't, because this NA shit ain't working, you know. And so I called the psychic. Honest to God, true story, I called a psychic. And, you know, and psychic said, you know, of course I had to pay my money, give them the credit card number first, you know. So she said, what can I do for you? And I said, well, look, I've been in recovery, not God's nonsense, and I've been doing this and doing that, and the shit ain't getting no better in my, you know, whatever. And she was like, yeah. She said, well, I got 8 years in recovery. Keep coming back. Honest to God, true story. I said, excuse me? I said, I just paid you my damn money, and you said, keep coming back? Man, I was mad. I was mad with y'all. I said, I can't get away from them. What is it? And so she asked me a couple of simple questions. She said, when was the last time you shared your story on one of those wards, you know, institutions? She said, when the last time you took a newcomer to coffee for coffee? It ain't all about you, Corrine. You know what I'm saying? I said, damn, really, truly, I could have saved some money. You know? And after doing that, you know, of course, I went on to the fourth step. But I'm going to tell you another experience I had in doing the fourth step. What I learned was if a thorough third step is not done, you're going to have trouble with that fourth step. You know, you can go in and tell me, yeah, I'm ready to face what, you know, what, okay. Because what happened with me was that I was on the subway and nobody from Narcotics Anonymous was on that in that car that day. And I had a flashback all of a sudden of that babysitter molesting me. And all I could do was call on God. But I believe that was because I had done a third step. You know, and had started building a strong foundation, you know. And I went on to, and you know, that fourth step, it's ongoing, you know. It's ongoing. And the fifth step helped me to introduce me to intimacy. I ain't know nothing about intimacy. The only intimacy I knew was, you know, and then I look at you and say, you gonna call? You know, and when my sponsor at the time took me by my hand and said, "We're going to kneel down and pray." I was shaking like a leaf to be that close to somebody and no sex going on. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the only thing I equated intimacy with. That was the only thing that I felt validated me as a human being, was somebody jumping up and down on me. You know? And so, you know, after that, some other things, of course, I went on to the sixth step, and I understood the shortcomings and the seventh step, and because I couldn't understand, I didn't know at first, and I asked my sponsor, and she said, "Well, you know, those are the glaring defects that really get in your way, you know?" And but I still had to learn some more lessons. That's why this thing don't happen overnight. You know, this thing don't happen overnight. One more time, I took my will back, you know, and went back to doing it my way. And, you know, I mean, when I met him, I was 40, he was 25. I said, "I'm going to make a man out of you." But he made a woman out of me. Because toward the end of that one, I was renting cars to Tree Box. Yes, I was. Honey, because that thing had went to the pleasure centers. I'm telling you some good stuff now. When you start feeling it going to the pleasure centers, well, you better pump your brakes. Say, "Wait a minute, baby, I got to pray." But I was gone. I couldn't do that. This man was living in my house where I was paying the bills, and he said I couldn't afford I couldn't afford him. You know? And I know that there's always a part I play in anything, because it all ain't on him. But damn, he ain't had to do some of the stuff he did. He ain't had to curve me like that. You know what I'm saying? And what happened was God intervened again and took him out of my life. You know? And the only way that could happen was him going to jail and getting 30 years. And I talked to a minister, and she said, "This is your time to make your move. But go over there and tell him." And that's what I did. You know, and I one girl I used to know, she said, you know, because I was like, you know, plus shit, I ain't bitten with him. 30 years? I ain't do that, he did that. You know. And she was like, I wouldn't say no shit like that, you know what I'm saying? Well, okay. You know, but I knew what I had to do for me, you know. And so I became open to step work again. Now, the first time I did the eighth step, I had three lists. Am I talking about the eighth or the ninth? Oh, both, okay. I made three lists. This list was, okay, yeah, I'll make amends. I think I can make amends to them. The second list was, I don't know, maybe I would make amends to them. The third list was, you know what, them. But over time, that third and second has moved to the first. And I have one list, you know. And, but my sponsor said, "Corbin, all you got to do is make the list. You ain't got to go out looking for nobody. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to make no amends. Just make the list." And when I made the list, I put some people on there, you know, that some of the early abusers, my mother and father for abandoning me, you know what I'm saying? And then I came to a point where I had to put, You know, I've been raped at least 9 times. And I had to put them on the list to make amends to them. I said, this just don't seem right, you know. And another guy who I was dealing with, and after we finished having sex, 4 of his boys came down the steps. But I had to put them on the list because I was tired of hurting. I was tired of holding that pain. Because that pain made me do stupid stuff, you know, that resulted in me being hurt every time. I put my kids on the list. Because I didn't feel like I protected them when they were little. And some things happened to them. But you know, at first I would not put me on that list because I didn't think I deserved to go on there. Because I had done stuff to hurt people. People had done stuff to hurt me. And I just didn't think I was worthy to go on the list. And then I started realizing that, yeah, you're worthy. Because you're not the same, Corrine. And you know what? As long as you don't put yourself on the list, you're going to continue to sabotage your recovery and your success. Because I don't care how much success you gain in here. The past has a tendency, 5 minutes. The past have a tendency, if you haven't dealt with the past, has a tendency to say, where you going? You ain't dealt with me. You know? And so I put myself on the list. For me, in the 9th step, and I'm going to say this and I'm going to close, timing is everything. I don't have to go looking for nobody. God has always made a way for the amends to be made in the proper time. Because everybody ain't ready for it. I have a family member now. My daughter. I'm going to talk about that hussy today. She's still bitter from the past. And I done made 15 amends. I done paid rent. I done paid this, I done paid that, and I'm through. I'm not making another amends to her. Because one thing I have done is try to get my children help in what they have been, what they went through as children. I did that. After a certain time, I was talking to somebody about my kids once, and they say, how old are your kids? And at the time, they was 20 this, 20 that. He said, damn, I thought you were talking about some little kids. So I'm tired, you know? And I'm not making another amends, you know? And however God play that out, I put that in God's hands. You know, but I have, and I'm certainly not going to look for any women who I slept with their husband and say, I slept with your husband. Because that part to say except when to do so, were injured. No. I did say to her, if I have hurt you in any way, please forgive me. I ain't have to tell her I slept with her husband, you know. And so, you know, that's pretty much how the 8th And the ninth step has worked for me. And financial amends, I'm going to say this and I'm really going to close. The financial amends, you know, if they got your right Social Security number, you're going to make amends. Whether you want to or not. But I'm not going to tell them where I live. Now I'm going to tell you something I experienced today. An addict who's a process server at the convention comes up to me and say, "You being sued, I got some papers to serve you." I said, "Damn, man, why you doing that here? You know, see me Monday. Damn, let me enjoy the weekend." You know? And he pressed me for my address, but you know, let him earn his money. That's what I say. He gonna have to find me. And if he does, fine. I'll show up to court. But damn, let me enjoy this here. I was fucked up by that. I'm sorry, excuse me. But you know what? Those financial amends are there, and I make them when I can. You know, and God has gotten me out of some of them, and I'm so grateful for that. You know, but I can't forget about those and forget about putting them on the list. And when God gives me the opportunity by me having some money and paying what I need to pay, I need to go on and do it. You know, and that's what I do. But, you know, thank y'all for being here for me so much. I keep coming back. Thank you.
At this time, I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Bob, also from the Washington, D.C. area.
My name's Bob. I'm an addict. And I'm excited today because I serve a God who creates excitement. And every day in recovery is sweeter than the day before. I thank God for the process, and I praise Him for the pain. Pain is discomfort created by disorder. So when I'm in pain, that means something is out of order. But I found out through the 12-step process that pain produces miracles, and pain is the prerequisite for promotion. At the end of my active addiction, I was homeless for 7 years. I had 2 cases in court, and I was boosting and selling food stamps. Living in Randall's shelter, 6 o'clock wake up, 7 o'clock departure, walk from Randall to Somme, that's S-O-M-E, so others might eat. Standing in that long line to get on the inside, eat grits and eggs, black coffee, no sugar, no cream, a hard donut, and a piece of fruit. Get on the outside and get on the eviction crew so I can make $5 the eviction, putting people out of their houses or their apartments that 9 times out of 10 were suffering from the same disease I was suffering from, the disease of addiction. The first step said we admitted we were powerless over our addiction and our life had become unmanageable. And the only thing I wanted to do is I just didn't want to be on it no more. Because crack make you commit petty crimes. I start getting arrested a whole lot. I ain't never get locked up till I start smoking crack. I got tired of going through R&D. You know what I'm saying? I got tired, man. I just got tired of being a bum. I got tired of being on it, man. And if anybody here forgot what it was like to be on it, we're going to talk about it. You know, on it. It just sound dirty. You know what I'm saying? You know he on it, don't you? You know so-and-so on it. Old people be talking about you when you walk past. Oh, ain't that so-and-so sound? You know he on that stuff, don't you? You know he on it. Yeah, I ain't know he was on it for real. Yeah, he on it. Look at him. I got tired of being on it, man. I ain't want to be on it no more. And I couldn't understand the court system. You know I'm on it, and they expect me to get him a clean yarn. I ain't understand that. What kind of system is this? I'm on everything, and you get mad at me when I give you a dirty yarn. How you expect me to give you a clean yarn with no help? And then they look at you funny when you go to court. You've been dirty this day, dirty that day, dirty this day. You was on this. What's wrong with you? I'm on it. You ain't giving me no help. You just told me stop getting high, don't miss your court date, go take a yawn, but you ain't giving me no help. They made me think, oh, there's something wrong with me. I'm a drug addict. That's what we do. So what I found out was, coming in recovery, you got to stop getting high. You can't go high till you stop getting high. I had to stop getting high, man. Because I wanted to go high. I knew I could do something, but I just needed to get off it. How you do that with no help? I wanted my fire back. You can't get high without fire, and you can't recover without fire. You can't even shoot dope without some fire. I wanted my fire back, man. So what the disease try to do is separate you from the fire, because if it can separate you from the fire, it can separate you from God. I wanted my fire back, but I needed some help. So a guy picked me up from 2nd Genesis one day. He took me to meet this guy. I was homeless. He was living in a nice room. I said, how you get this room? He said, I know the guy that run the rooms. You know, he rent the rooms. He own the house. I'm going to take you to meet him because I got to take the rent over there. He took me to this man's house named Frankie L. When the man opened the door to his house, he had this glow, man. I'm trying to tell you something. I never heard him sharing the meeting. Never seen him before in my life. When he opened the door, he said, hey, man, how you doing? Come on in. He had a glow, man. He had something on him. But I felt something in him. He said, come on in, sit down. How you doing? And I was in awe. Not that Lawton glow when you go down for a 60-day study, you do some push-ups, you come out. Not that kind of glow. He had something else. Because I had been going to meetings. I seen everybody who was supposed to be somebody. But I never seen him till they took me to his house. And I said, well, this dude got something. And he had a pair of brand new alligator boots in the box on the floor. I said, I have some bad shoes. I want me a pair of them. And he said something that baffled me. I couldn't understand. He said, that ain't nothing. He said, that ain't nothing, man. But I misunderstood what he was saying. He wasn't saying it in an arrogant way. What he was saying was, that ain't it. And that ain't all. That ain't nothing, man. And I was like, man. And then he says, there's no defense against humility. He said, humility will take you anywhere you want to go. There's no defense against humility. It's all the defense in the world against arrogance, but there's no defense against humility. He said, all you got to do is stay humble and the sky's the limit. I said, all right, bet. So, stop getting high. My urine started coming up clean. And I got off paper about 7 months earlier. Because I just wanted to be free. Tired of the government running my life. So the second step said we were confronted with evidence. God loves us so much that he's willing to confront us to let us know that he's real in our life. Coincidences and miracles. See, God really ain't got to do none of that for you. But he's willing to do that for us to let us know he's real. So I started seeing coincidences and miracles. I wasn't on it no more, man. That was bigger than anything. And then I messed around and got my GED. That's big for me, man. You know, my general equivalency diploma. You know, I ain't on it no more. Now I can sit still and read. Because when you're on it, you can't sit still. So I'm able to sit still and read. I'm going to the gospel mission. They got me some tutors helping me study. Because he said the sky's the limit. And I believed him. Because I saw how he was living. Never heard him sharing the meeting. But I saw what he had, how he was living. And not only that, I saw what he had on the inside. I said, I want that. So the third step say, we I don't want to mess this up. They said we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the kingdom of God as we understood him. Now I'm clear. I've been restored to some sanity. Being restored to sanity means sound thinking, soundness of mind, the ability to know the truth. So the third step saying, you know, look at where you've been and look at where you at and look at where you can be. Either go back to being homeless or keep going and get what else God got for you. So it wasn't hard to make a decision. And I found out, man, that God really did love me. Because people real funny. Some people love you as long as. Long as you got a job. Long as you got some money. Long as you got a car. Long as you're doing something for them. Long as you got some clean time. But God loved me when I was a bum in the shelter. So it wasn't hard to make a decision. And the third step is so powerful because it says so many things. It says, in one part it says, we cannot pause in our spiritual program. That means you can't put the brakes on. Because when you pause, it's going to cost you something. When you pause, we cannot afford to pause. And then it says, we realize that the God that brought us here is able to help and guide us if we let it. If we let him. He want to help me, but I just got to let him. Right? So I got evidence, I got miracles, I ain't on it. I'm seeing people I know from my neighborhood. That make it real because I know them and they know me. So then the relationship was so good. Anytime you're in a relationship with somebody that's good, that's who you're going to talk about. Y'all know how it is. And then you get mad at somebody for talking about who they with, but it's good. You can't help it. So I was just talking about God because that's who I was in a relationship with. But then something happened. God said, Bob, you can't keep talking about me. Now it's time to start talking about you. So I go into the fourth step, and it say, we made a fearless and thorough inventory of ourselves. Searching and fearless. You know why they say that? Searching and fearless, because you can't be scared about what you're going to find. So my sponsor gave me a fourth step package broken down in three pieces. Childhood, adolescence, and adulthood. So you can see the progression of the disease. So I want to get better. Tired of being where I'm at. See the program working. Know I got some more things to do with my life. So I get my fourth step package, I start writing. All roads lead to home. The reason why some people don't want to do a fourth step is because they don't want to go back home. But you got to go back home so you can see where the triangle of self-obsession started. You got to see where the resentments and the anger and the fear started from. Because I couldn't understand where I was until I saw where I've been. All roads lead to home. So what was happening at home? That's why I hung out on the corner because I ain't want to be at home. So what was happening at home? My mother was an addict. And I was a teenager. I ain't no discipline. I ain't had no father. My mother was an addict. So that means I was wide open, no discipline. Do what you want to do. As long as you come home whenever you feel like it. Respect the house. But no discipline. Selling drugs. Talking trash, but then I found out my mother was on it. And ain't nothing worse in the world when you're a son and your mother on it. And everybody in the neighborhood know. And you know what we do with women when they on it. So now I'm selling drugs, now my mother on it. Now my ego messed up now. I'm self-centered to the core because I don't want my mother to be on it. So when I found out, that crushed me. Because now I got to be home. I can't talk trash like I used to. I can't be like I want to be. Because I know soon as somebody say something about my mother, it's going to shut me up. And some of the same people I grew up with were sleeping with my mother. So I got to live with that every day. What I'm going to do now? And sometimes I see my mom on the corner and I try to act like I don't even see her. I'm talking about resentment, anger, and fear. All roads lead to home. So now I'm growing up angry. It's a certain kind of rage a man have when his mama out there. See, it's a lot of healing that got to take place between you and your son when you come in recovery if you still got one. So then something happened. One day I come home, my mother got pregnant by somebody I don't even know who it is. And she stopped getting high. The miracle is not a mystery. And so one day I come home, I see her in the kitchen cooking. And you know, when a woman get pregnant and she taking care of herself, she started glowing and looking good. I was stopped in my tracks because I started seeing my mother again. She was looking good. She was in there cooking. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's my mother right there. I felt proud. I felt so good, man. And my mother had the baby. I got two other sisters, a brother, half brother, some other half brother sisters. But I got two other sisters and my younger sister that my mother had. My mother had my younger sister. 2 weeks later, my mother had a stroke, went into a coma, and died. My aunt raised my younger sister. My name wasn't on the lease. We live in the projects. You know, when your name ain't on the lease and the head of the household died, you got the road. So that's how I became homeless. So now I'm on the street with all this anger, resentment, and rage, and my mama gone. So now I ain't got nothing to lose. I'm talking about when the animalistic behavior showed up. And the worst person in the world is a person on the street that ain't got nothing to lose. So I'm out there still selling drugs in the same neighborhood I grew up in, all our furniture on the sidewalk, and I'm trying to maintain an image. And I got to come around there every day and try to get some money with all our stuff on the sidewalk. But the good thing is she died clean. But the bad thing is I'm still stuck here. And it ain't about drugs no more. It's about what's on the inside. Now what you gonna do with all that? So I get the fifth step, me and my sponsor, we sit down again, I thank God for him. And the fifth step says, this is the key to freedom. And we like keys. Yeah, we like keys. Not kilos, but these are the keys to freedom. The kilos were the keys to bondage. Now we're working with the keys to freedom. So me and my sponsor, we sit down. I had the first conversation with another human being in my life without no barriers, no image, no false projections. The first real conversation with another person in my life. And after we got finished talking, it's like I came out the dark. I was like, my God, instantly. After we talked for about 5 hours. And when we left out where we was talking, it was like I came out the dock, man. The whole atmosphere was different. And my sponsor, he smiled and looked at me. And he said, yeah, the disease is going to come at you a different way now. And he got on the elevator and went home. I'm like, what are you talking about? I was free. What's wrong? Now what I got to go through? So the sixth step say we become entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of crap that I was all right. I got all that trash out me. We talked. I got free. I thought it was over. I thought I was going to be all right from then because everything I just shared with y'all, I shared with him. That stuff been killing me all them years. So when I dumped it up there, I said, I'm cool now. Because I thought that was the only problem that I had was my mother being on drugs and dying the way she did. And he said, no. You ain't out the woods yet, son. So the sixth step, just becoming tired already. And I saw how raggedy I really was in the sixth step. And God always used toxic relationships to get us where we supposed to be. I ain't gonna stay there long, but I'm gonna pop for a minute. Yeah. We gonna pop for a minute. So I started getting in all these toxic relationships. Because they said don't get in a relationship in 1 year. I did that. Yeah, faithfully. I said, I'm going to do my year. I did my year. I'm free now. I did my year. I'm all paper. You know, and I was young, good looking. You know what I'm saying? Everywhere I go, somebody going to like me. You know what I'm saying? I grew up in the ghetto. They told me how to dress. You know what I'm saying? I already had gang. I ain't never had no problem with women. That wasn't my problem. And I always went to the little dances. You know what I'm saying? I'm mingling. I'm N.A. I'm N.A. certified. Everybody know me. Hey, God, you know what I'm saying? Hey, baby, what's happening? You know what I mean? I'm clean. I done stuff where everything going to be all right. And they would say things like this. Don't kill them. Let them live. What? What do you mean? Ain't nobody going to do nothing to me? I ain't understand what they was talking about. So I started getting some action here and there, you know what I'm saying? And I found out was I was robbing people of their emotions. I was an emotional thief. See, I don't just want you to be with me, I want your soul. Because I'm still trying to get something from you that I never got from my mother. All roads lead to home. And see, my mother was a good woman. My mother never cussed me out, never talked to me bad. She was all right. She just had a drug problem. So I was trying to find somebody to treat me like she did. And see, that ain't fair, because can't nobody live up to them expectations. Because your mother's your mother and your woman's your woman. But I couldn't separate the difference because I was toxic, baffled, and confused. And every time I got in something, I got into it looking for a way to get out. Unable to commit to somebody. So it wasn't nothing real. Everything was counterfeit. Everything was counterfeit. And I was doing so much damage because of my own emptiness. Because I didn't know what I was doing, man. I didn't know how I was hurting people. And then, so insane, my sponsor said, you know what? He said, you insanely jealous. You insecure. You got low self-esteem. And you got control issues. But they still like you. Because a toxic relationship means that you sick and the person you get in a relationship with sick too, and y'all hurt each other. Operating off codependency. That's the link you got. You need them and you need them to need you. That's what it is. So after some more pain, like I say, pain is discomfort created by disorder. Met this woman, got her pregnant, had a son, drama the whole time. And I said, when am I going to get better? I'm ashamed about all this stuff. Because I ain't never tried to hide in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm sorry, if you ain't trying to hide, you can't hide in Narcotics Anonymous. And my sponsor told me earlier, he said, if you don't start sharing, you're going to die. So I was saying all this stuff, but I wasn't getting no better. I'm like, what's the use? I'm frustrated. I'm a mystery to myself. I'm a mystery to myself. I'm saying I'm doing what they're telling me to do, but I ain't getting no better. What's wrong with me? I'm a mystery to myself. Because I didn't understand what I was doing, man. Because I wasn't touching on where the pain was at. Calling it lust, that's the easy way out. Oh, I got a lust issue. No, you don't. You are human. You've been wounded, and you ain't been addressing where you've been wounded. That's what's wrong with you. So what happens is, you start spending money you don't have, buying stuff you don't need, trying to impress people you don't even like. But there is hope in the sixth step because it says eventually. Eventually, faith, humility, and acceptance are replaced pride and rebellion. Eventually. So that's the only thing I got to run on in the sixth step. Eventually, okay, I'm all right now. Because I know eventually everything going to be all right. Eventually. But that word means something. The root word is event. Something got to happen before you can get eventually. The main event. Let's get ready to rumble. Because you can't get to eventually until the main event. So this is what God do. Because he love us. The sixth step says, it says, perhaps. For the first time, we get a vision of our new life. See, God passed out testers. see in the sixth step, God passed out testers because he want to keep you. And if you know anything about a tester, they don't give testers to just anybody. They got to trust you with a tester. Y'all remember? Come on. Everybody ain't get a tester. They got to trust you with the tester. They over there getting the tester, and they standing over there waiting so they can find out how good the dope was. You know why they do that? Because they got to be able to trust you to tell them the truth about the dope. So in the sixth step, God passed out testers. He gave you a vision of your new life. First, I said, God, why are you playing with me? How can I get there when I'm right here all messed up? That's how much faith God got in us, to show you where you can be while you're in the middle of all your defects. So I'm like, okay. I'm living, I'm doing okay. People are getting to know me, I'm sharing, I'm growing, I'm still messed up. And I said, but I'm so flawed. But my flaws don't hinder my flow. My flaws keep me humble while I'm flowing. And that's what the haters don't like. Because they know you're flawed, but they can't stop your flow. So all they can do is talk about you like a dog. Why he getting blessed like that? You know what he did yesterday? Not him, no. Bob did what? And he blessed like, how he do that? Because I got flaws, but they don't hinder my flow. Yeah. Tell him that. So now, how do we get out? Seventh step. See, you can't, God got an answer for every question in recovery. So the seventh step said, we pray for change. Relationships help me see myself. It's time to ask God for help and relief. That's what it said in the book. It's time to ask God for help and relief. Why do we say that? Because I've been trying to fix myself before I go to God. I'm forgetting that he brought me in here. How am I going to change me when I couldn't get me in recovery? It's time to ask God for help and relief. Not relief off dope, but relief off yourself. This is a different kind of desperation in the seventh step. Not desperate to get off the dope, but desperate to get delivered from the defects that'll take me back to the dope. So God said he put you in isolation. You go in isolation in seven. Because God, you know why he isolated us in seven? Because he want to know, can you handle being an outcast before I make you an attraction? So I make my list in eight, put down what I did to the people. I harmed a lot of people. And the biggest harm was this girl I was messing with when I was 16. I was 17. She was 15. I got the girl pregnant. She wanted to get an abortion, but when she was going to the clinic, she came and knocked on my door because she wanted me to go with her. And she knew I was in the house, but I faked like I wasn't home. And every time I seen her, that hurt, that crushed me. Because I didn't know how she was going to feel when she got off the table. And she's 15 years old. I'm 17 because I didn't know what I was doing. And every time I would see her, that would crush me. Because I felt like a chump because I was not able to handle the responsibility. Just go with her. I couldn't even go with her. And I knew the baby was mine. And every time I would see her, that I was like, God, why I do that? And there wasn't nothing wrong with her. She was cool. But I didn't know what I was doing. So God set up the circumstances in nine. Her sister was having surgery at the hospital where I work at. And I seen her. She didn't even recognize me. So I get on the phone, I call my sponsor, I say, yeah, you know so-and-so down here when I was telling about fifth step. He said, oh, yeah. I said, her sister having surgery. He said, don't say nothing to her this time. I said, but she here. And he said, no, her sister having surgery. Don't say nothing to her. I said, but she here, man. She right here. He said, don't say nothing to her. I said, but she here. that I can get free today. See, right here. He said, don't say that to her. I said, she right here, man. What happened was they postponed her sister's surgery for 3 weeks later. I said, I might not see her again. 3 weeks later, see, God in control. 3 weeks later, I see her again. We come out to the waiting area, we start talking. She got three beautiful children. I'm so glad she was able to have kids after that. See, I'm trying to tell you, man. And we talked. She wasn't mad. We were just kicking and talking, you know what I mean? And I was so happy that what I did didn't mess up her life. Because the literature says when we're using, everybody we come in contact with is at risk. So you can't claim victim in Narcotics Anonymous when everybody you come in contact with is at risk. That's in the book. And that ain't no lie. Everybody I came in contact with when I was on it was at risk. So 8 and 9 keep you humble. It's about forgiveness. Resentments come from the lack of revenge. We resent people that do stuff to us and we can't get back at them, so then we got resentments. Resentments come from the lack of revenge. I ain't mad at nobody that I got back. I'm mad at somebody that did something to me and I couldn't get them back. Resentments come from the lack of revenge. Talk to somebody when you get outside. You still mad at so-and-so? Yeah. Why? Because I ain't got back yet. Ninth step said, this step should not be avoided. If we do, we risk. We are reserving a place in our recovery for relapse. People go back out because they don't go back in. You got to go back in. Because it's about the future. God can't reshape your future until you revisit your failures. Thanks for letting me share.